Welcome to Tackling the Opioid Epidemic Prescription Playbook, a conversation about empowering and educating communities to prevent overdoses and end the opioid crisis. My name is Armando Miranda, and I am a prevention specialist with the Prescription Playbook, and I'll be your host today. We are excited to welcome our guest, Sarah Richardson, Vice President of Harm Reduction and Outreach for Family Guidance Centers. How are you doing today, Sarah?
I'm excellent. How are you?
Doing great. Yeah, so I like to jump right into it. I really like to have our guests just kind of talk a little bit about where they're from, maybe the career path you've chosen, specifically what kind of brings you to harm reduction, what kind of brought you to family guidance centers, and anything in that kind of sort.
So I was born and raised on the East Coast, and through the early part of my career, planned on going into foreign service, international development, focused on economic development. And I did that for a couple of years right out of college abroad and realized pretty quickly it wasn't for me. So I did not start my career knowing I wanted to be in public health and harm reduction treatment work. But I ended up coming back to the United States, and I ended up in my early 20s in Alaska, taking a job with the Anchorage Health Department there. And that was, certainly in the early days, but the days when we were very aware that there was a really bad opioid crisis and it was getting worse with the emergence of fentanyl. So we were just starting to talk about fentanyl in those years. And so I spent almost a year in Anchorage doing a lot of community assessment work, talking to folks whose families had lost people to overdose, to treatment providers, recovery homes, law enforcement, business, all kinds of different folks, learning about how this crisis had impacted them and the gaps in services. And it was during that time that I actually first encountered harm reduction in the context of substance use. And it was a time in my life when, in a personal way, I was struggling with behavioral health myself. And I thought it was just the most beautiful, beautiful thing. And I completely fell in love the first time I walked into this one syringe service program in Anchorage that we were doing an interview at. And I never really looked back. So that was my first year was doing that work in Anchorage. And then since then moved to the Midwest, got some more education in the space, and ended up in Chicago a couple of years ago, working for the Department of Public Health on harm reduction and doing a lot of systems coordination and expansion of services available related to harm reduction and overdose prevention. And then a couple months ago, moved over to Family Guidance Centers to oversee a great expansion of this agency's mobile outreach, harm reduction, and linkage to care service. So that's how I got where I am.
Wow, that is a very expansive career path. As someone originally from Chicago and now living in central and southern Illinois, it is a world of a difference, kind of moving from a large metropolitan area that kind of working in rural health and rural health networks. But yeah, that is a really interesting story. I mean, you started on the East Coast, you ended up as far west as you possibly could. It's really great to hear about some of the experience you have in outreach. And one question I kind of have from that is, like, what have you kind of learned from your experiences? Worked in a lot of different environments and public health, a lot of the work that we do is interacting with the community. What's the best way to kind of get the community involved in a lot of these efforts, especially in something that has as much stigma as like substance misuse?
I think to some degree, it's a bit community specific. And so, as you said, yeah, in Alaska, even though I was in Anchorage, that's rural compared to a city like Chicago. Alaska is a rural environment. I'm from Vermont, which is a very rural environment that also struggles deeply with substance use and opioid overdose. And those communities function in different ways, I think, than large cities. I would say that since I've become involved in this work, the overdose crisis has only become bigger and impacted more and more families in more and more complex ways, and has left histories of trauma and despair, right? And so we're at a point now where there is no community, there is no home that is unaffected or untouched in some way by the crisis. And while that's devastating, I think it's also motivating, and it's able to push some of the stigma that we see in a really different direction. So when I started talking to folks years ago in Alaska, there was way more stigma in the communities I was talking to about things that now, at least here in Illinois, even in more rural parts or under-resourced areas of the city, the stigma is not there anymore. And so maybe it's perhaps a little bit naive, but I like to think that we are moving in the right direction, and that is pushed somewhat just by the magnitude of the crisis. I do think continuing to talk about this in a really humanizing way and to reiterate to folks that, you know, there is no family, no community untouched by this is really important. And to continue to just really hold these discussions in public health contexts and spaces and try to, this substance use has always sat in the United States in particular in a highly criminalized framework and infrastructure. And it is part of my life's work to try to pull it away and to talk about this as a health crisis, behavioral health crisis, and to address the whole person as a person and not a crime. So I think that has proved helpful as well.
No, yeah, absolutely. And a lot of the work that we do with the state opioid response and the prescription playbook, more specifically, that's kind of something we've become like almost hyperfixated on, right? It's introducing the concept very young to students, how we have to kind of work together to talking about it more openly. And I think that that's something when I was growing up, it was much different. I still remember being in middle school and it was a lot of DARE. You know, it was a lot of the conversation about that it is a criminal act. Right. And that's kind of the way that we should treat it. And that's why we should be scared about experimentation and all these things. And I think what we've seen now is that we are really looking to educate and inform and live, giving students that autonomy to kind of make that decision themselves and understand all the risks associated with substance experimentation and substance misuse. And I think that's the direction we kind of have to keep going in. And it's really living in the state of Illinois, I've seen it as well. The way that we talk about it at a policy level has become a lot more focused on educating and not so much on the criminal, like the criminalization of substance misuse. And I think that's really important for the youth to see moving forward, right? I hope that they don't have to live in a world where they are, again, have to separate the human from the act. And yes, yeah, so that's really, really great. And I appreciate you saying that. We became connected through our participation in the Sangamon County ROSC. If you would like to kind of explain to the viewers what a ROSC might be, the role that you have, and what you believe the ROSC and the Sangamon County ROSC, what its role is for the larger community, and what you want to kind of accomplish through that collaboration and coalition.
So ROSC is an acronym that I think folks in Illinois might be familiar with, but to my knowledge, this is just an Illinois program, at least at the moment, and it stands for a Recovery-Oriented System of Care, ROSC. There are many ROSCs that, so these are community coalitions, basically. Typically, they represent at least one county, sometimes more than one county. They're funded, we're all funded by the state under a big umbrella ROSC program, but each sort of ROSC is funded by the state to have one agency sort of lead or co-direct, let's say, the activities of the ROSC, you know, holding the meetings, facilitating, making sure people are sort of moving in one direction. So that is Family Guidance Centers, so the agency I work for down in Sangamon County. So we are out of Springfield, and our ROSC is Partners in Recovery. And we serve all of Sangamon County. And so, what that functionally means is that there's a group of service providers in the general substance use recovery space, but also businesses and interested individuals and people not maybe directly day-to-day working in this work, but engaged in some way. And we come at least once a month together to talk about resources in the community, to address gaps, to network with each other. You know, I think the goals broadly of ROSC are to support a recovery ecosystem and infrastructure in the state that is hyperlocal, so that each community, each county, each ROSC is developing the resources, the community events, the relationships that make sense for that community. So that's broadly what ROSC is. And I would just say, you know, even though other states don't maybe have ROSC specifically, many states have things like this, and even at hyperlocal levels in cities, there are task forces and things, right, that are doing this work of trying to bring many people who do many different things into one space to work towards one goal. So I think that's what ROSC is about. And it is so needed in the substance use, harm reduction, recovery world, because for many reasons, many of them structural and financial, and others just historical, we tend to be siloed. We tend to be able to do one or two things as agencies. We need to work together because substance use affects housing and employment and mental health and physical health and substance use, you know, behaviors and relationships and transportation access and all of it, right? And then, you know, there are deeper issues of community disinvestment and racism that we can address only if we work together. And so that's, I think, the power of convening bodies like this. And I think what the state is hoping to accomplish with ROSCs like ours.
I think you hit the nail on the head as to like maybe my understanding of, being involved in a ROSC, and I work across many counties, and so in the state of Illinois, so I am often involved some level in 9 counties in central and southern Illinois. And I think when I have a conversation to my coworkers and my supervisors, often what I will say is that it's so interesting to see how different every county is and how different the needs are in every single county, especially when it comes to, the opioid epidemic. The cause, the factors, the drive, like those driving factors for, and the access to service are just so different in a lot of these counties that it often requires that, like a large coalition to be able to kind of get people the right kind of resources that they need. So, I've worked as a prevention specialist for over a little over a year now, and it's kind of crazy to think about a time when they didn't exist. And like you mentioned, it was kind of like a siloed effect that we all offered different services, but we didn't really have the ability to kind of communicate. So we had this multifaceted issue with little collaboration. And so I really hope that from the state of Illinois having this program in place, that we continue to kind of have it available and make access to resources and getting people to the right kind of resources that they need as seamless as possible, which is really what I've seen from the conversations, not only in the Sangamon County ROSC, but across the state. How do you want to use the network, the Sangamon County ROSC, to spread a positive message, not only within the county, but across the state?
Do I want to? Well, I want to work with, walk with our council and really kind of lean on them. And I have had the privilege of sitting in on some other ROSC councils and meeting leaders about those councils. And you're right, every council approaches this differently. So I want to be very like, I want to honor Sangamon County ROSC and what they're working towards. And what I've seen in the last, I think it's been 5 months that I've been at Family Guidance and working on this project is a real need for a real expressed need to do coordination around specific types of service delivery. For example, across the county, understanding who is distributing naloxone, where is it being distributed, where can the public then access it because of those distribution points, who is refilling them, how are we sort of coordinating that? How are we making sure that the education people are getting when they receive naloxone is, you know, accurate, is trauma informed, is meeting them where they are. So that's one small example, but I think that's the really concrete type of example that an organizing initiative like ROSC can address. Is it's bringing people together to say, well, I do this and this and this, and let's map it or let's organize it and help then the public then know, well, if I'm in this city, this is the laundromat or the bar or the bakery that I can stop by and pick up naloxone at. Because in these rural areas, there's not often a qualified health center. There's not often a mental health clinic or a homeless shelter or a place where you might otherwise think you could go get a free and life-saving, you know, resource like this. So we have to be more creative and bring in, you know, the visit, the gas stations, you know, the whatever is there and meet people where they are. And so I think what I hope to see in this ROSC is the generation of ideas that fill gaps in the community and that those gaps are identified by the community and then solved by the community.
That sounds just really great. And I think that that's kind of how we frame this kind of issue, is that it's not unique to any particular person or even to a specific city or a town. It's something we're dealing with on a national level, right? And so it is up to us individually as people living in our communities to kind of have, like you said, some kind of stake in this. If we are small business owners, if we are, working in a public office, what we can individually do to kind of be a part of like the fight to end this kind of crisis that we're in right now. I guess a question that kind of derives from that is, and I think something I've been kind of stewing on is like, how do we get community members to sit at the table? How do we kind of get them to take a seat at the table and offer up, their time? Because I think sometimes what I run into and what I often see is that sometimes people don't feel like they have the capacity to kind of participate in something like that. And oftentimes the conversation that I have is that however little it may be, however small a gesture it may be, like you mentioned, having naloxone available for free, just having it in a space where where someone who might not know where to get it can easily access it. I think that's often kind of how the conversation goes. And yeah, I just wanted to know like what what you think is like the best way to get kind of get folks to the table. What is it that you think would do that? Or in the opposite end, I'm sorry, it's a long-winded question. Just very thought-provoking right now. Why do we see a struggle to kind of get community members to a table, if that's kind of what you've experienced as well?
There's like so many reasons why we struggle, and many of them are maybe not even unique to this sector or this crisis or this set of work. People are pulled in many different directions. It can be hard to take on more commitment. It can be hard in these spaces when no one is really being paid, when it's all volunteer, when it's all coalitional. Those power dynamics are hard. The responsibility and accountability are hard. Who's, if you sign up to do something, and you can't do it, like who does it fall on? All of that can be challenging in this and many spaces like this. I do think specific to this world, there is stigma related to engaging in substance use work and recovery work. There is also just an exhaustion and a trauma around it that sometimes it's hard to, show up again to another event, to volunteer again, to be reminded of things that are painful and hard. But on the other side, I think that's what motivates people that continue to show up is their passion for the work. And in this sector, I have never seen people so passionate who love what they do and care about their communities more than in this work and the work of recovery and harm reduction. And I think what I have seen work in getting people to the table is kind of being very respectful of time. And being very clear about what we're asking, that's always really helpful. And I think this and in many places, when you can compensate people for their time, especially their lived experience and their experience of substance use, I think that's incredibly important and respectful and providing dignity to the work. And then I think from like in my experience, harm reduction is what gets so many people to show up, is because it is meeting people right where they are. And so exactly like you said, a business who serves cupcakes all day doesn't really, they know this is going on because they see people coming down the street. They see people in their lives, but they don't know how to help, right? But if the harm reduction provides a tangible thing, whether that's naloxone, education, having outreach workers come through, having a number you can call to connect people to services, promoting the 988 mental health crisis line, providing test kits, like whatever it is, there's so many ways into harm reduction wherever you feel comfortable. And all of it's helpful to the community, and all of it breaks down those stigmatizing notions and those barriers to care. So I would always say lead with harm reduction, and additionally being that sort of respectful, providing dignity in the work. But it's hard, and I think it's hard in every sector, sort of solve some of these collective action problems.
No, yeah, absolutely. For some context, I used to work in immigrant and refugee resettlement in central and southern Illinois. And likewise, often what we ran into was the stigma trying to get people resources and language barriers. People, and it came down to like sometimes if you had the capacity to be able to have someone that could translate in another language, French or Spanish or something like that. And there was the level of stigma, right? And so we often ran into the barriers of trying to get people resources and kind of hitting that wall. And I think it's really great what you've kind of touched on. And I hope that we kind of continue to expand this conversation, because I think it is, as long as we kind of keep it open to that everybody has a stake in the conversation, everybody has a role in kind of fight and ending the opiate epidemic, I think that people respond positively to that. And I think we'll kind of continue to see the effort grow. And kind of a part of that kind of leads me into my next question. We do a lot of work with youth, the prescription playbook, and specifically student athletes or students who are high performers, whether that be like on the academic side or part of a sport, because we've identified these students as being at risk for developing substance misuse, whether that be through injury or trying to improve their performance. And oftentimes we're speaking with these students and coaches and athletic directors about how these students kind of fall into that at-risk category. Very often that includes, bringing in parents to the conversation, adult community stakeholders into the conversation. I would love to hear you talk about maybe the role that parents and those community stakeholders have on mitigating the risk of substance use misuse for the next generation.
Yeah, it's an important question. And I think My perception of the history of this in the, at least the last couple of decades is that parents, caregivers, teachers, adult sort of authority figures in children's lives have maybe felt a bit helpless about what are you supposed to do? Am I supposed to scare a child? Am I supposed to be really honest with the child? Am I supposed to be all in on the harm reduction? You know, what's the what do I do and how do I help? And you know, I am not a parent or caregiver or teacher, so I can only sympathize. I think it's really important, as you said, to acknowledge that across the board, this is not unique to this country. Young people will experiment with many substances and many behaviors. And so, generally speaking, an abstinence focused or a just say no, it doesn't work. We know incredibly clearly from our experience with that in the US, that it doesn't work. But it can be really hard because all of us as adults were raised in that world. So how do you, as a school teacher or a parent, have an honest, open conversation with your children about opioid use or cocaine or injection drug use or alcohol and driving, all of these things, if you were never taught to engage with these things in open-hearted, curious ways, you still carry that fear and/or misinformation, right? Because we don't receive very good education. So I think, I mean, to answer the question, these adult, caretakers in children's lives are incredibly important. And I think one of the most important ways is to model sort of not being afraid of drugs, of a substance, of an inanimate object, and being curious about what these substances are, the role that they play, not only in individuals' lives, but in our structures and in our policies, and sort of always putting that harm reduction foot first, where it's, I'm going to meet, which is for me, I'm meeting you where you are. I'll answer your questions. I will never lie to you about, all of this, but I'm also not going to lie. This is like positive or like overly positive, or that there are no risks at all, right? There are always risks to our behaviors. And we have to kind of balance that. And I think it takes a lot of skill that lots of us, would struggle with. And I have a lot of sympathy for that. But yeah, I mean, it's really challenging. And it's challenging to do, if you look at like a school or a large system, how do you make sure that that information is made available in a way that's comfortable for everyone and meeting everyone where they are? Our systems are not good at that. They're not primed for that. They're primed for just say no, And so it's really challenging.
I think you bring up a great point in the scale of like parents modeling just curious behavior. And I think that that's something we at the Prescription Playbook have been trying to kind of do through the distribution of our materials. The conversation that we're having with adult stakeholders, teachers, coaches, athletic directors, is that we shouldn't approach this in a way that we are even scared to talk about it. You kind of have to talk about it in a light, because students are getting exposed to this on social media, well before we can kind of sit down and talk to them about what specific substances might be. And what we've often seen is that sometimes students are more educated on what's going on in the world around them than sometimes than their parents are. And I think that, as if we're able to kind of encourage parents to kind of have that modeling behavior, and have open and honest conversations, then I think we're much more primed to be able to have conversations with our youngsters across the United States and specifically in Illinois. As we kind of are kind of reaching the end of our conversation, I would love to hear about maybe some flagship events that you want to see kind of take place in Sangamon County or through the ROSC collaboration. I know you've mentioned you've only been a part of Family Genesis for a few months, but what are some kind of events that you would love to host with the coalition?
Yeah, so our coalition hasn't talked about really specific events. Can't like cite any, coming up in the next few months here. I know that we have a committee called Recovery in Action associated with our ROSC, and there it's a collection of folks who are primarily self-identified as being in recovery, and they hold events in our community that really are open about being in recovery and celebrating being in recovery and celebrating creating spaces where it's safe to talk about that. Be public about that and also do things that don't involve substances, don't involve alcohol, and are still fun, are a place people want to be regardless of their substance use history and relationship to drugs. So they've done movie nights, picnics in the park, painting events, and those types of things are just really beautiful. And I really love those smaller events that bring together, maybe 2 dozen folks who really get to talk to each other and engage over something like food or paint or art. So I hope to see more of that moving through the winter when it's the cold winter months, and it's always good for all of us to come together and remember that we live in a community together, not isolate in our homes because we're cold. So I hope to see that. And then I know that a lot of other ROSCs have done sort of memorial type events, and there are a lot of them coming up for Overdose Awareness Day and then through Recovery Month. And we don't have that planned in Sangamon County right now, but I find those events very powerful. I've attended them in other communities, and I think holding space to remember people we've lost is an important part of a collective grieving process. And so I would really like to see if our council is interested in that, kind of the development of something like that, for whether that's in Springfield or elsewhere in the county, for our county.
From our part at the Prescription Playbook, as long as we're part of Sangamon County ROSC, and me living in Champaign, I'm not too far. I think that we'll always try our best to kind of collaborate and try to give as many resources as we can as well, whether that's co-hosting events, being able to provide materials for any upcoming events that you guys might have. We just want to be a resource for you all as well. And as I kind of wrap up here, I just want to say to everybody listening, we appreciate you for joining us in the fight to end the opioid epidemic. For more information on how we can work together to raise awareness on the opioid epidemic and end it once and for all, you can find us at ilhpp.org /prescription-playbook, as well as Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Sarah, do you have anywhere they can reach you at?
Yeah, so if you want to reach out to us about ROSC specifically, you can just email ROSC, ROSC, at fgcinc.org. And also Family Guidance Center, fgcinc.org is our website. So you can also visit us there for the array of services that Family Guidance Centers provides all over the state of Illinois.
Thank you so much, Sarah. I really appreciated our conversation and how candid it was. I think that our viewers will obviously have a better scope of what a ROSC is, because I'm sure if you're working in this kind of sphere of work, you might hear that acronym tossed around. So I think people will leave knowing a little bit more about what a ROSC is and maybe get involved with the one in their community. So again, I thank you so much for your time, and I look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you.